Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Wednesday, July 19, 2023. The head of the Anglican Church in South Sudan says the signatories of the 2018 peace deal should hold elections on time.
The ECS leadership appeals to the revitalized transitional government of national unity and friends of South Sudan to ensure that elections are done without further extension.
And some lawmakers in South Sudan say security forces harass constitutional post holders.
The person who punched me, who broke my ID, he was also drunk. I think he was also, you know, under influence, heavy influence of alcohol.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Senior bishops from the Episcopal Church of South Sudan say the country's general elections should be held at the end of the transitional period as stipulated in the revitalized peace agreement. The bishops are calling on the signatories of the 2018 peace deal to implement the remaining provisions of the peace agreement that could provide a conducive environment for the conduct of polls scheduled for December 2024. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Speaking to reporters on behalf of Anglican archbishops on Tuesday following a two-day meeting in Juba, Archbishop Justin Badi Arama, the primate of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, said the church is aware of the enormous challenges facing the signatories of the 2018 peace agreement. Badi says conducting the elections at the end of the transitional period is in the best interest of South Sudanese who are yearning for peace and development.
The ECS leadership appeals to the revitalized transitional government of national unity and friends of South Sudan to ensure that elections are done without further extension so that the lives of innocent citizens are not put at risk.
The archbishops say during their two-day meeting they found out that some important provisions of the peace agreement have not been implemented, including reconstitution of the elections commission. But he says the Anglican Church is concerned about the delays in the implementation of some of the provisions of the agreement.
As a church, we are ready to support the process through prayers, preaching peace messages, advocacy, civic voter education, election monitoring, and mediation.
The church leaders say the transitional government of national unity should allocate funds to the various bodies charged with the responsibility of ensuring the elections are held on time.
If the elections are conducted while security arrangements are not fully implemented, we fear that the situation in neighboring countries might happen. That is our concern. We need the security arrangement to be fully implemented, and we have one army in the country.
Information Minister and a government spokesperson Michael Makwe says the transitional government of national unity is working around the clock to complete the remaining tasks stipulated in the roadmap for extending the transitional period.
The people of South Sudan have been suspicious and they are saying there will be another revitalized roadmap, is what they are saying. But we are telling them that we are moving, there is no any other extension, we are going for elections. And for us to go for elections, we will make sure that the constitution is out and the security arrangements are completed, plus the election commission and the political parties council is set up.
This will be South Sudan's first national elections since the country got her independence from Sudan in July 2011. the country missed conducting elections last year after the signatories of the 2018 peace agreement did very little to implement key provisions of the peace deal, and they extended the transitional period for more than 2 years. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still in Juba, some lawmakers in South Sudan's National Legislative Assembly say they are frequently harassed by security operatives in the capital. A lawmaker representing Eastern Equatorial State in the Council of States says he was beaten in Juba by a group of security forces, including police and the National Security Service. A police spokesperson says he is calling on the Sudanese to report any cases of harassment. For VOA News, Daniela Imoya reports from Juba.
Okero Dongto, who represents Eastern Equatorial State in the Council of States, says unidentified security personnel beat him, took his money, and later charged him for possessing an undisclosed amount of foreign currency earlier this month. Odongto says he believes the security personnel who harassed him were acting on their own.
Some of the soldiers are well behaved. Even at the unit where I was taken, some of them were okay. They talked to me politely, and then they addressed me, you know, with honor. So, with the exception of some few, and then the person who punched me, who broke my ID, he was also drunk. I think it was also, you know, under influence, heavy influence of alcohol.
Okello says his experience should be an eye-opener to lawmakers in South Sudan. He appeals to the government to educate security forces about the rights of South Sudanese. Paulina Lokudu, a former information minister in the Central Equatorial State, says armed men who appeared to be security agents assaulted him at gunpoint recently. He says the armed men took some of his personal belongings.
And that was in the morning hours. At around 11 a.m., it was drizzling. I was coming out of my home, and I got attacked by two vehicles, one V8 and one Land Cruiser. Seven people, they tried to kidnap me, and it happened that they broke into my car and took away some valuable items.
Lokudu says the government should address the frequent harassment of South Sudanese by rank members of the security forces. The spokesman of the South Sudan Police National Service, Major General Daniel Justin, says Okello has not filed an official complaint about his alleged harassment. Justin stressed that nobody is above the law and security forces who harassed lawmakers will be penalized.
Those of MPs, they have their immunity. Whenever there is a case which they are part to it, then there is a special process to be taken inside that is to be brought to the law. So that case we are still investigating to find out those involved.
Major General Justin says people should report cases of abuse by security forces so that appropriate actions can be taken against the culprits. Ajoh Noel, a South Sudanese lawyer, says the security forces who arrested Okello violated South Sudanese laws. He also says the attack on Okello tarnished the image of the security forces, adding that the lawmaker should be treated with respect.
It is something that, you know, weighs badly on the image of the organized forces, be it the police or the CID, as he claims, or the military intelligence that were involved in the process. That says a lot about our institutional structure and strength, given the fact that probably there is still a weakness in terms of knowledge and in terms of training for our organized security agents.
Major General Justin says all members of the organized forces in South Sudan face challenges, and the police service has taken note of Okello's alleged harassment. For VOA News, I am Imoya Daniela reporting from Juba.
Some Sudanese refugees in the South Sudan's capital, Juba, say the ongoing fighting in Sudan has separated them from their families. One refugee says since the conflict erupted in Khartoum on April 15th, he constantly worries about the safety of his family members. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Sudanese national Jamal Mustafa sits in front of a shop in Juba with his head in his hands as he thinks about the day he will see his wife and children again. He says he heard that family's property was allegedly looted by the rapid support forces and some members of his relatives are missing.
My family has really been affected by the war. Some of my family members left Al Janina and flee to Chad. They have nothing to eat, no clothes to wear, nothing at all. They walked 5 hours to the border with young children of 5 years. All their belongings were taken from them, and others have been killed.
The ongoing fighting in Sudan has sparked a large exodus of Sudanese, with many internally displaced, while others are seeking safety in neighboring countries, including South Sudan, Egypt, and Chad. Mustafa says some of his relatives are still trapped in the fighting in Darfur. He says he constantly worries and wants to know the location of some of his family members.
I lost contact with some of my family, and now they are under siege. Those who are in Moon are unable to move out. They don't have any means to go out. They are being trapped in by the Janjaweed. All roads are closed, and they are unable to move out. I don't have any communication with them because there is no phone line network.
Omar Mohammed, another Sudanese living in Juba, says since the fighting erupted in Sudan in mid-April, he lost communication with his family, adding that he is not sure if they are alive or killed.
I have more than 2 or 3 months without talking to my family because there is no mobile network available. Since fighting spread to Darfur, I have not heard from them. And now I don't know how they are doing.
Another Sudanese in Juba, whose wife and kid are missing, says he is wishing to see an end to the fighting so that he can trace the location of his family. Mustafa Adam says the conflict in his country has affected him.
There is nothing else I'm thinking about. I only think about how this war will end in the country so that there will be peace and security in order for me to go. There is no way for me to go now, but if there is peace, I will be able to come to see them.
Mustafa, Mohammed and Adam are calling on the international community to pressure General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, the head of the Sudan Armed Forces, and General Mohammed Abdan Dagalo, leader of the Rapid Support Forces, to end the ongoing fighting across some parts of Sudan. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayer in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the Kenyan opposition has vowed to stage 3 straight days of protests against President William Ruto's government. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you do to conserve your energy when it is very hot outside?
I drink lots of cold water because it relaxes me. So immediately I become dehydrated or I feel hot. I take in more cold water, yes, and it makes me okay.
Well, I live around the beach, so on a hot day I just take a stroll on the shore wearing a light clothes so that I can feel the sea breeze around myself.
If it is hot, you have to make sure that you get somewhere where it is cool. You go and bathe. Those are normal things you have to do.
When I'm at my home, I undress. This is my home. I have a bedroom. My home is big. Why won't I undress?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Kenyan police Wednesday fired tear gas at protesters who took to the streets in defiance of a government warning after earlier demonstrations turned violent with more than a dozen people killed. Otieno Namwaya is East Africa Director for Human Rights Watch. He tells VOA's Carol Van Damme the police allegedly abused their authority by firing tear gas and live bullets at protesters.
My reading of what I've seen across Kenya is that the initial stages of the protests are very peaceful until when police start throwing tear gas at people. And it's the police who then provoke people to start throwing stones. And then police also go further and not just throw tear gas at the protesters. They also start throwing tear gas in people's houses. And that has caused the death of a number of people from suffocation. From tear gas, most of them children, in people's houses because government had urged people to stay indoors, and then people stay indoors and the government throws tear gas in the houses. The police throw tear gas in the houses. Police have also used live bullets, sometimes very unnecessarily. If you look at the protesters, most of the time, if you look at the protesters, who the main protesters on the streets are unarmed. Occasionally, they do throw stones. But government has just been, the police have just been using live bullets, as of last of which I think we have numerous deaths.
Does Human Rights Watch consider this a violation of international law with human rights abuses if police have been using live bullets on protesters?
Definitely. It's a major one because the protesters are not armed and they are not violent until police start provoking them. And then after police provoke them, they shoot them. In other cases, I think police have shot live bullets in people's houses. I saw that in Kisumu. We've seen that in parts of Nairobi like Kibera, Madare, and parts of Kariobangi. And a number of people we documented in March, April, and May were people who were non-protesters. There were protesters, some who died, but majority of those who died were not protesters. And this tells you sometimes it's not the people you hear have died are not necessarily because the government is trying to quell protests. That's because police go out there and just become reckless. They start throwing tear gas and shooting live bullets in people's houses.
Some officials have said stop the violence. Just recently, the interior minister said anyone planning to unleash violence on Kenyans is hereby warned to cease and desist. But you're saying that police are not listening. Is that right?
I don't think they mean it. If they mean it, they will actually make sure that whichever police officer has used excessive force is held to account. But if you look at Kenya's history, there has been violence this year, of course, and the killings during protests have happened this year. They happened in 2020 during Corona, around 27 people. In 2017, there were killings during protests. We documented 104. In 2016, there were killings during protests. We documented about 22. None of those killings is currently or has ever been prosecuted in court and has ever been investigated. Even IPOA, which is meant to investigate the police, has never investigated killings during protests. So it's like police know that when they kill people during protests, they can always get away with it.
And what is Human Rights Watch calling for in Kenya?
The first thing is that the Kenya government needs to recognize and appreciate the right to protest there and to stop interfering or trying to tamper with the law, which is recognized internationally. Secondly, all the abuses that have happened during protests, including the killings of 2017, the killings of 2020, need to be investigated and taken to court.
That's Otieno Namwaya, East Africa Director for Human Rights Watch. He spoke with VOA's Carol Van Damme from Nairobi earlier today. From Nairobi, we move to Mogadishu, where Somalia's Rebuilt National Museum is hosting its first show after more than three decades of damaging war and conflict. The 90-year-old museum is holding an international exhibit for 18 artists. Mohammed Sheikh Noor reports from Mogadishu, Somalia.
Somalia's National Museum finished rebuilding in 2020 after decades of war, looting and neglect. But the COVID-19 pandemic postponed plans for a first show until now. The museum is first exhibit since closing with the outbreak of civil war in 1991, opened July 15 with paintings, drawings, photographs and sculptures by 18 artists from Somalia and abroad. Foreign artists, including those from Italy, Mexico and Sweden, exhibited their works remotely due to logistics and security concerns. For many Somalis like 24-year-old Sumayo Abdi, this was their first time visiting their national museum.
Everyone who has come to this exhibition is very happy because it represents our heritage and the legacy of our mothers and grandparents.
Museum director Osman Gedo oversaw the restoration of the museum, founded in 1933, and says they are ready to return it to its former glory.
The museum has begun its work, and the next step will be to place cultural objects in the museum. As the museum contains a four-story building, it currently operates on the ground floor and the second floor. The remaining two stories of the building are empty. The remaining two stories should be filled to the brim with cultural objects as they represent Somali culture and history.
Head of the Somali National Academy of Culture, Abdul Qadir Hussein, noticed many objects were looted during decades of civil war.
Prior to the country's civil war, the museum was stocked with 4,000 cultural heritage items, and all 4,000 items were taken. I believe a few were destroyed, and very few others were exported from the country. But the rest, we believe, are stored in homes for personal use. We expect people to return those items, even if just a history book. Bring it back to the museum.
The theme of the museum's first exhibit is called Hoy, which means home in Somali. Somali artist Abdel Nasser Abdul Qadir's work, which included both paintings and sculpture, is part of the exhibit.
I am pleased to be a part of the first international art exhibition held in Mogadishu that brings together various artists from around the world, and the theme is about home. What does home mean to you? What role does it play in your life? And so on.
Somalia's Minister of Education and Culture, Farah Sheikh Abdul Qadir, called this first exhibit in decades a significant milestone and a sign of improved security and stability.
The opening of this art exhibition in the National Museum called Hoy is proof that we have overcome the days of anarchy, assassinations, and destruction.
While Somalia still faces attacks by militant group Al-Shabaab, this first show at the capital's Rebuilt Museum gives a much-needed sense of normalcy. The art exhibit will continue at the Somalia National Museum for 6 months. Mohammed Sheikh Noor for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
And now for some sports news. Women's soccer players in Africa, much like those in the United States, are often paid less than their male counterparts. Nigeria's female national team, the Super Falcons, is in far the most successful in Africa, winning 9 out of 11 continental titles. The team is representing Africa this month at the FIFA Women's World Cup in Australia. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Blessing Emmanuel started playing soccer when she was only 12 years old, but her family initially resisted and tried to force her to quit.
My dad was like, no, I don't think I want my daughter to be in the midst of boys, stuff like that. So I just had to convince them.
And she did. In 2020, Emmanuel joined the Niger Rattles Football Club. And last year, she led Nigeria's under-17 national team to India, and the team won a bronze medal. Niger Rattles coach Sonny Udu says the club's initial objective was to help underprivileged girls.
It's not every girl child that have the opportunity to come from a very good home. You discover that most of them, they are on the streets doing what they don't feel like doing. Why? Just for them to meet up some responsibility.
Women's soccer is increasingly popular in Africa, and Nigeria's national team, the Super Falcons, is among the most successful. It is the only African team to participate in FIFA Women's World Cup since 1991 and is currently in Australia to take part in the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup starting this week. Despite the success, female players say they are often poorly compensated compared to their male counterparts and have been demanding equal pay. Last week, the UK-based Daily Mail reported Nigerian players could boycott their first match against Canada on July 21st in protest over unpaid bonuses. Bumi Oladeji is a member of the Niger Rattles Football Club.
Being a girl child, the expectation of your parents is just for you to work, get married, and then start to born their own grandchildren. So, but you having the passion for the football, you'll be like, oh, this is where I want to make my money.
Supporters worry the disputes could dampen morale at the tournament, but the Nigerian Football Federation promised to address the issue. The Niger Rattles Football Club assistant coach, Sonny Udu, thinks parity will happen.
They want to see how what the male gets is what the female will get, but it will take time.
In March, FIFA, the organization coordinating soccer around the world, announced that every player in the Women's World Cup will receive $30,000. Players on the winning team will each get $270,000. That makes the trip worth the while for the Super Falcons, but still leaves them striving for better paydays from their home country. Timothy Obezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
I have some special announcement. VOA's English to Africa service will be celebrating its 60 years of broadcasting into Africa on August 4th. Help us celebrate by sharing your thoughts on our programs. You can write something like, your thoughts about Sunnyside Sports. Send a voice message or text to this WhatsApp number, +1202-258-3076. Tell us what is your favorite program. Or let us know about a particular news story that connected with you. Recall a favorite memory about VOA Africa and tell us what stories you think we should cover or how we can improve. That number again is +1 202-258-3076. And thanks for 60 years of support. That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, July 19, 2023. We now leave you with Emmanuel Kembe and the song Zaman Kuru Juja. We've been listening to Emmanuel Kembe and the song Zaman Kuru Juja, which means time for cultivation has come. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Helen, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Yes, Kalina Kuruju. Yeah, Odessa.